Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. Hello, Ma. I'm doing a show. Yes, early. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, look under your computer. I left you something. www.thematthewaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook, The Matthew Aaron Show on the Facebook fan page. I'm here with
Lee Capreas. Hello, that was Matt's mom, by the way. If you did not hear that imperfect.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't have her mic'd.
Yeah,
and mic.
Believe it or not everyone in my house is mic'd.
Really? Well, it's Steve Wyrick joining you here. Unfortunately, I'm mic'd. Unfortunately for some of you. Yeah, that was awkward. So early. That was
6:30.
Oh God!
Doing the show so early.
I mean, at least she knows, though. At least she knows you normally do 8:30. Give her that much.
Right.
Let's give her some credit here. She at least knows that 8:30 is your normal jam time.
She's,
I mean, it'd be fun if you're just like, you're wasting the day. It's so beautiful out.
You know, yeah. You could have asked for meatloaf.
Yeah.
So on the show today, Adam Mann's back.
Yes.
Did I say that right? Man's back?
We're going to find out from him.
To me, it sounded like a man's
Bach.
But in case
Bach.
He's Jewish, I don't want to go German with the pronunciation.
Right.
I'm going to say Mansbach.
Mansbach.
That
I think. See, I think you and I just want everything to sound more intellectual and cool.
Yes.
But I bet you it's man's back.
Mansbach. Mansbach sounds Rastafarian a little bit.
That's what I was told, man's
the
Mansbach,
back.
So. I don't know. You never know. You never know.
Oh, yeah.
So welcome to the program. A lot of stuff going on. I did want to talk about this week's programs. We're going to talk to Pat Tobias later, though. He'll fill everyone in on the next week and a half of shows.
Good. I need to build some kind of a schedule.
Yeah.
It's for my edification as much as the audience's.
Steve and I have been working very hard on a private project.
Yes, this is true.
Secret. Top secret.
Very. It's interesting to cross paths. I only see my mother when I'm coming home from your house.
We have been working, I'd say about noon to 3 or 4 a.m. every day.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, you kicked me out at 4 last night, actually.
Well, I kicked you out because I know Ma needs the car.
Yes.
Not to throw you under that bus.
Yes, Ma does need her Model T back.
The Model 1991
yeah.
T.
Yeah, and I got to give her the crank, or else we didn't make copies of our crank, so I got to.
I just love when my dad's always like, why don't you take Steve's car?
Well, he must have figured out I picked you up from Midway once, so now I.
By the way, Steve, I don't ever want a copy of your crank.
Of my crank? No? Mine, yeah.
I hear it's a great magazine.
Oh, yeah, right.
You're off my key ring then. No crank for you.
Okay.
But
We're not going to talk about it today, but tomorrow Pat will be here in for Kano and Lenny, and we'll talk about
the
trip to Bratstop on Sunday. I took a day off.
Yes, yeah, save that.
Oh, yeah.
Steve wasn't too happy with the day off. He were rather worked, but I told him I needed one day. I haven't been out in like 3 weeks. Like Lenny's like, you have no stories to tell on the radio. You got nothing. You don't go out anymore.
No, that is where the stories are generated.
A pointed criticism, Lenny.
Yes. Well,
Lenny's a walking criticism.
Well done,
Leonard. He'll let you know.
And then I'm hoping Thursday to have on the legal analyst of Hollywood Reporter. I'm working on it right now to talk about this Rupert Murdoch thing, because I kind of feel like we left our listeners kind of like confused
and
in the dark.
But let me just rehash. If you didn't hear that show, let me just rehash it in about 5 seconds. So, Lee, what's going on with Rupert Murdoch? He's in trouble? I don't know. Okay, we're going to move on to our next segment.
All right. I will tell you what I have learned, and of course I'm a week behind everyone here. Rupert Murdoch's corporation was hacking into celebrities and high-powered people's cell phones to get news. And now there are claims that Piers Morgan and the UK Mirror did the same thing, the Daily Mirror. They were doing the same thing. Piers denies it.
Of course. Wow.
If Piers gets caught, that would be bad, because that guy's career. Look, Rupert Murdoch's Rupert Murdoch. The FBI can go after him. Anyone can go after him. He's like 70 and no one's touching him.
Yeah.
Wait, he goes to jail for what? The rest of his 5 years?
Right.
But Piers, his career's at a high point right now. He can't get busted with this. CNN will have him gone. The America's Got Talent, that's a couple mil a year, I'm sure, gone.
You know who wins with all that, too, is if Piers gets in trouble, Howard Stern's going to be doing quite the dance.
Well, Howard loves Piers, though. He had Piers on.
Yeah, they
he likes him. He was Piers's second guest.
Well, they did the
after
debate.
Oprah.
Well, they did that whole debate on
Howard's well,
show.
Well, Piers said he wants to be Howard. No, he didn't say he wants to be Howard. He said
he was better.
Than Howard.
Yeah.
He wants to be better than Howard.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think you got to say. I didn't really blame him for anything he said. I think it's kind of ballsy to even say it to Howard.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
So, speaking of Howard, Thursday's guest he's on Howard all the time. So, I'm looking forward to that. And then Sammy Simon. So we're kind of getting some Howard people on. I don't know. Part of me is like, I don't want to be confused with Howard Stern ever.
No.
Unless it's with money.
Yeah.
Then yes, confuse me.
Well, it certainly won't be with success.
No.
No.
No, and don't get me wrong. I love Howard. I always defend Howard. It's just
I love Howard too.
there's certain aspects.
The Matthew Aaron Show is fervently pro Howard Stern.
Yeah, but there's certain aspects of his show that I like more than others.
Yeah.
So, I can see why people sometimes complain about Howard. I don't complain. I'm fine with everything, but I get it. But I don't want to be confused for that. We're not throwing bologna at strippers' asses.
Yeah.
That's because we couldn't get any in the studio.
Yeah.
No.
That's because the price of bologna's gone up.
Oh, can we have this studio discussion?
Yes,
okay.
Please.
I get a phone call yesterday. David Krumholtz and Jenna Dewan Tatum, Channing Tatum's wife, they got a new show coming on the air called The Playboy Club, and they want to do this show.
Okay.
So Pat Tobias, our booker, goes, we should do the show on location from somewhere, Gibson's, whatever.
Yeah.
But I basically have two theories of thought on this. They can either come to our studio, or I'll do it at Cigars and Stripes.
Okay.
Now, of course, I was tossing out ideas because Pat was complaining, and I said, well, why don't you call the Playboy building and see if we can do it there? It's called the Playboy Club. It's about Playboy. Maybe it'd be a good tie-in.
Well,
I doubt they're going to give it to us, though. But those were my options.
If we're going to do it, they should send us some reading materials beforehand.
Right.
To my house.
But Steve's point of view on this is very strong. What is your point of view, Steve?
Yeah, my point of view is they should come down to the basement studio here. They should do it here. The whole, like...
Mom can make them brownies.
Mom can make them brownies. All right, here, we've always championed that...
Homemade Rice Krispie treats.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've always championed that we do the show from the basement. Why the hell go anywhere else but the basement? Have them come on by.
Well, what I started to find out then was Steve and I were the only one on board with this game plan.
I'm on board with it. I would love to see our first live in-studio guest.
Well, wouldn't it be nice, though, to have them come do it here? But Pat's like, I want to get press for this. I want to do it big. I don't want to have it at, your mom's basement, because what press is going to show up?
Well, they might show up for the post-show smoke when we get the hot tub going. Get that.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Why don't you call E! News? Why don't you call Access Hollywood and say, look, there's a show coming out of a town over from, they say Wayne's World all the time. I mean, I think it kind of sells itself.
I don't think... Channing Tatum would like it if we were in the hot tub with his wife.
No, the hot tub thing's out probably, but he may also not like that my bedroom's 10 feet away from the studio.
Okay.
That it is. That's...
Okay, but I'm sure Channing's not too worried.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he's like, no, I trust you, babe.
I mean, did you see that movie where he could fight? He'll kill us.
I'm not worried about that. I just don't think he's worried about me getting with his wife anytime soon.
Okay.
We got 6 yards on measurement, by the way.
6 yards. We just measured.
Doing a show with the makers of a new show called The Playboy Club live from a steakhouse is pretty, I have to say, it's a pretty fucking sweet idea. Okay.
Well, The Playboy Club, I just got word, I forgot about this, is now the Palmolive building where Vince Vaughn lives.
Yeah.
He lives in the penthouse there, $14 million. So... I don't know if that's a good idea now. But what's wrong with cigars?
I would love that, too. I'd be cool with that.
I love cigars.
Cigs and Stripes. Ronnie. And Jenna Dewan in the same building.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Dutch.
Hey, they can check out the smoker out back with the Cadillac wheels and have a good time.
That would be fantastic.
Maybe
I don't know.
I'm just saying, you might as well do it somewhere interesting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Gibson's doesn't really, I love Gibson's, and we promote it all the time, but it doesn't really pop for me. Wait, because it seems like everyone does that.
Well, expected. That's to be expected, go to Gibson's.
It seems like that's the radio move to do.
I see what you're saying. Morton's.
Yeah. Denny's. They got a great steak.
Ponderosa.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to have to go to Ohio to find one.
I'm willing to feel.
No, it's just my point is, and I love Gibson's, don't get me wrong, but it's like, it seems just like the radio move to take your show on location and go somewhere like a bar.
Yeah.
And yes, Cigars is a bar, but it's not.
It's not. It's so
it's
much
Barnum
more.
Barnum & Bailey.
It is so much more.
And Ronnie would love to do it there in
a
heartbeat.
Yeah.
Celebrities or not, he would do it there in a heartbeat.
Right, absolutely.
He wanted me to do my show from there since day one.
Yeah.
And I just figured it's too much. taking all the equipment there, then you got the loud atmosphere. I don't know about audio quality.
Where are we going to do it? Sitting at the bar? Sitting around the bar?
Right, right. Now, if we did a live show there with them, we'd do it out back.
Yeah.
You do it under the tent.
Right.
Oh, could you imagine running into Cigars and Stripe doing this remote with, like, it's Kevin Smith night again or something like that?
Well, that's the other thing. Kevin Smith does his show now at John Lovitz's club.
Oh,
Adam Carolla does his show at Lovitz's club. It just seems like the thing to do is go to a club or a bar or a restaurant. Why don't you do it at the fucking studio?
Wait a minute. Where are we going to go? Chuck E. Cheese? If we're going to take
this
on the
up.
Road, where are we going to do the show? We can't go to the library or the bowling alley.
I don't know. I just think the bowling alley sounds good, though.
Yeah. Stripes going off every 5 seconds.
So that is the issue there. So I was kind of wondering what your guys' opinions were on that, because maybe I'm just crazy. So.
I'm in for Cigars and Stripes just because it that atmosphere would make for a very good show.
Well, first, I'm in for here.
I mean, a great show.
If they would do it here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in for here.
Me too.
You know what, though? I think...
Because this is the Playboy Club. Look around.
Oh, yeah.
We got Mickey Mouse here.
Boy, they.
We got Bridget B. hanging out in the back.
We got a rack of Hummel figurines and ceramic bells there. we've got a whole wall of White Sox memorabilia that's signed.
I got Febreze for when Lenny farts.
Right, Febreze.
We're covered, really.
Yeah,
there's a Lazy Boy recliner. You could watch every episode of Seinfeld ever made on DVD. There's a talking Homer Simpson clock.
Listen to all the reasons to be here.
Yes. Yeah. We got I Spy in the corner over
there.
There's
a trophy on the wall of a fish. I'm not even sure if it's real or not. Is that a real fish?
Yes. It's a replica of the fish that was caught.
Okay, so no. We have.
They take the fish, basically, and they bring it to, like, the shop, and they do a replica of it.
Okay. So
I don't know why. I guess the real fish, I mean, I guess they would kind of smell or something. I don't know.
So you got to get it. You got to get it like it's got to be dried and, you know.
Oh, is there a process?
Yeah, it is.
Look, I don't kill animals. Okay. I'm not on that train.
Well, fishing's different. Hunting, that's murder. I'd never go hunting. But fishing? Come on.
Yeah.
All right.
Well.
I'm with you on I'm in for here and Cigars and Stripes. I would not be closed-minded to Gibson's. Just anywhere, really.
I'm not closed-minded to anywhere, but I'm just saying it's like you pick somewhere, try to do it somewhere really interesting.
Yeah.
Here would be interesting.
Yeah. You can't say it wouldn't be interesting
here. Can I bring up another thing?
Yeah.
Bring it up.
Why did I see a guy yesterday buy a couple 40s with a link card?
What?
Wait a minute. Oh,
no fucking way.
Someone want to explain this to me? How that's
what?
Even possible? How does that work?
Since
you worked at 7-Eleven, I was going to you for
I worked in the business. I did work in the industry.
You were in the industry.
Well, I am your industry expert. First
is there ways around that then?
Not that I knew of.
He's shaking his head,
I mean, apparently there had to have been because people were buying chocolate and candy and shit. With their link card.
Now, how would you buy booze on a link card? Do you just ring it up as pop or milk or something?
No, it's any place that sells that takes link. You can buy anything in the store. It doesn't have to be a certain thing.
Is that true? I don't think that's true.
I don't know
that true? No, because Steve worked at 7-Eleven. There's supposed to be certain things off limit.
We couldn't sell coffee on link because people would throw coffee at me if I wouldn't put it on their link.
Well, if the link machine accepted the link card for a purchase of 240s, then it's clearly okay to buy link to pay for malt with link to pay for that OE.
God. No wonder our Illinois state here is bankrupt if people are doing that. I'm very shocked.
You know.
Our machine would always decline, like, if you came in for your sandwiches or your coffee or anything, like grill products or any of that other bullshit, we couldn't sell with the link. It had to be, like, cereal.
But if you tried ringing it up, it would be okay.
Without sounding like a real asshole here.
Yeah.
What?
I think, oh, man. This is going to get me in a little hot water.
Sound like an asshole. I like
the Julia Grays of the world are going to be firing off on me if I say this.
All right.
Look, when it comes to welfare, I'm cool in the gang, okay, with the idea. There are some big problems with it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Big problems, and something needs to be done. And I would not say that maybe to the extreme of shutting the program down and starting over.
Yeah.
And that if that means people don't get welfare for a month or two, get a fucking job.
Survival of the fittest, you're telling me?
I don't know what to say. Get a job.
Yeah.
For 2 months.
Your goal should be to be off it. I agree.
And I don't think that's a lot of people's goal.
It's not.
Maybe there could be some kind of government aid for like a 3 month period so they could shut it down, but there need to be new rules, new restrictions. It needs to be a whole new program.
Well, you know, I just want to say as we continue with Billy Bob's favorite show.
Yeah, he may like this argument, actually.
We take Link where I work. I work in a butcher shop in West Loop. I'm a butcher. And we have a Link machine. And you can't just run the card through. You actually have to enter the entire number because the machine doesn't work properly and the cards don't work.
Oh,
which
I
think is kind of appropriate for the welfare credit card. Like, it doesn't work either.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Well, we had a little – people think I'm rolling in dough, but what happened yesterday? I sent in my bill on Monday morning.
Do you mind if
Saturday?
I tell this story?
No, go ahead.
All right.
I don't care. So, I'm not embarrassed by how broke I am.
So everyone who thinks – who confuses Matt with Richie Rich.
And they do.
We're going to
– Steve knows better than anybody. People do confuse me for being rolling in money.
No, literally for Richie Rich.
Yes.
You look like Macaulay Culkin in that movie.
Of course.
So I'm going to
– I look like the thing that ate Macaulay Culkin in that movie.
So we're at Jewel last night getting some this and that, some pops, some other chips.
Some essentials for the show.
Basically pops
and work.
Pops and chips. That's what we get. It's like $30 worth. $35.
Which I do for everyone that comes over.
He does.
I don't even do it for myself.
I'm drinking my Cherry Royal Crown.
I don't even do it for myself. But continue.
So we're in the self-checkout, and his card is declined.
Not just one card. Go ahead.
So he pulls gets the first card out. That's declined. He gets out the emergency Discover card that's never used.
Nope.
That gets declined. And then it's really awkward because we need to, you know, figure something out. So we have to void the entire item. And
the whole $35.
All $35 voided. And
people standing behind you, of course.
Oh, we did have people behind us. That's right. Matt had two cards declined at the Jewel.
And then what did I have to do?
Oh, do I even need to?
This is embarrassing.
You had to wash.
I want people to know how fucking
I wasn't gonna
broke
say that.
I am.
All right, wow. So we go home back to Matt's place, and he goes inside, hat in hand, and tells his mom what happened and bummed money from his mom so that he could get us our beverages and our potato chips.
Oh.
But I'm just an awful human being.
But he's
filthy rich.
You are filthy
I'm
rich.
I'm not loyal.
No,
I'm
not
a terrible
at all.
Person,
you
really. Are,
and you always have money.
Yeah, I always have money. I'm always rolling.
And your ego, that actually is true.
Yeah, the ego part's kind of... The ego part, though, is inflated because I need something because my wallet ain't inflated.
No, right. The moths were eating the moths in your wallet. That's how broke you are. Not that I'm one to talk, but that's the thing. I wasn't going to tell that last part. I didn't know how you felt about that last
part. It is what it is.
We don't have anyone with the bleep button.
No, I did pay off the credit card.
No, yeah, you did.
The other day. So it just hasn't gone through yet.
Because like if you have multiple credit cards that aren't working at the same time, it's like your identity's been Douglas in the game
I was worried about the Discover thing, but I think Ma looked into that.
Oh, and another vital detail: didn't you say that you saw the bill sitting on a desk in your house, like your dad forgot to drop it all in the mail or something like that?
Oh. So the bills were paid on Saturday, but Dad sends out all the bills together. So my bills, his bills, Ma's, because he just mails them all, right? Because he goes to work. He takes 83 to get to the expressway. So there's a post office right there, and you could just drop it in the mail, you know?
Yeah.
And it gets there earlier. He wants to get them in the morning, whatever. Well, he went on vacation. Not vacation. He went on a work trip yesterday. I had to drop him off at O'Hare at 6:30 a.m. I come back and there's all the bills sitting on the fucking table. I go, mother. So that's why my credit card wasn't paid off.
My daddy didn't mail in the bill.
Oh. And apparently the good people over at Discover didn't think he was good for it.
Right.
So I brought my bill over only, not the rest of them. I brought my bill.
Well, yeah, of course.
I got it taken care of.
Oh, and then can I do one?
But I'm rolling in it.
You can't pay your bills online like the cool kids?
You know, I know you can do that. I just don't. I'm never going to.
Okay.
I'm paranoid about online anyways.
Me too.
We got to add a man's back in a couple minutes, but go ahead, Steve.
Author of Shut the Fuck Up.
Author of Go the Fuck to Sleep. And he's also written many other books like The End of the Jews.
Oh, that's right.
He wrote that book?
Yes, An Angry Black White Boy.
Okay.
Speaking of Angry Black White Boy, there's a there's a follow-up to
speaking
this.
Of.
There's a follow-up to this. There's a Maury Povich-esque follow-up to this grocery story as we do get back. And they said for Matt to come onto the checkout line and not go to self-checkout.
Oh, yeah. My checkout skills were called into question by a lady that works there. So she told me to come into the regular checkout line.
Excuse me if I can't do your job as well as you can.
Well, that's what she was basically saying to me. I was my checking out skills got called into question.
They did.
She did not think I was speedy enough with the checkout.
I don't know why. It was all pop. I mean, you know.
How hard is it? Well, yeah, and by the way, it weighs a little more than every other item at the store.
It does.
So it's kind of hard to just swipe her and throw her in the basket.
You had to have been doing that pretty slow, though, to get thrown off self-checkout.
I didn't think so,
I think we were all right.
I thought we were average.
We were like changing tires at the Indy 500. There. We were bad.
Woo!
<All right>. And then
Michael Winslow's here.
Hey, by the way, I can't talk about the secret project that we're working on, but I do want to thank Mike Royce, Rock Rubin, and Michael Ian Black for being very speedy and
helpful.
Very cordial and helpful in what I am working on with Steve and some other people, and very thankful for that. They're
very.
Great friends of the show. And you know what? I only had to go to three people.
Yeah.
No one turned us down, so I didn't have to go to anyone else.
No.
So for other guests out there that are like, did Matt ask me something? No. I just didn't have to go to anyone else. The first three people I asked, done and done.
Right away. They just like you that much, I guess. I don't know.
You know, I got an email this week from one of our former guests. I forget who. Well, I know we talked about Whitehorn's email on Thursday.
We did, yes.
But I got another email over the weekend. I can't remember from who, but basically it was the same email as Whitehorn's where they're like, look, your interview show is way different than any other one I've done. It was refreshing, relaxing. I could do whatever the hell I wanted. Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
I love it. And that's not the first type of email reaction.
No, I get that all the time,
all the time.
Is just great.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's kind of like that.
We're our biggest fans.
Yeah. Well, you know what I think is what it is, though, is I think we are just basically not trying.
Yeah.
And it turns out that people like that.
Yeah.
People don't like the pre-written bits on Leno and Conan or whatever.
Baba Wawa either.
People just like sitting back and bullshitting. Right. When publicists come to me and they go, so what are you going to talk about on the show? I literally throw the word bullshitting in there half the time.
Bullshitting.
I go, you know, we're going to talk about his projects, his career, and then we're going to bullshit.
Yeah.
And they're always just like, okay.
Yeah, well, all right.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Did he say bullshit?
Yeah.
Did he say they were going to bullshit?
Could you imagine getting like an email about that? Like you're the client. So what will I be talking about? Oh, well, you'll be bullshitting, sir. That's what you'll be doing.
Well,
be
Mike Royce is coming back on next month, and so is Jim McCarron.
Oh, and
they're booked
yes.
for their book. We're going to have a return show week. The 30th and 31st is McCarron's and Royce. I haven't decided on who will be September 1st yet.
Okay.
Possibly Shelley. Possibly. I haven't decided. I'm going to figure this out. But, Mike Royce and Jim McCarron's are like, okay, what do you want to talk about this time?
Right.
And we're just going to bullshit.
That could be kind of hard because we're not going to be like, all right, so.
Well, we do have stuff to talk about with Mike Royce.
Well, yeah, but like you currently, like we just, Shelley again, you're going to ask the same questions about, yeah.
Well, maybe Jim McCarron's on vacation, played some new songs on his iPhone. I don't know. Maybe he has some new things going on.
Yeah.
He got an email from Norman Lear the other day I want to know about.
Ooh, what?
First of all, for those out there, yes, Norman Lear's still alive.
Oh, yeah.
For those also out there, Norman Lear did stuff in the TV business.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing big.
No.
No big whoop.
You may have heard it, and a lot of people seem to kind of like it.
Yeah. My sister's calling in. Do I even want to answer this?
Is this going to be
right before Man's Bot calls in?
No. Listen.
Is it Man's Back or Man's Bot?
We're going to find that out.
He's going to tell us. Listen,
oh, he's
going
to tell me, all right.
Don't take this. But listen.
Don't do it. No, don't do it.
Luisi was chatting her up on the book. That's probably why.
Yeah, Luisi just wants a new girlfriend.
Oh,
yeah.
They.
Right, Megan? Are you listening?
Oh,
call
boy.
In. Let's talk about it sometime.
Oh.
Well, I'll make sure to drop the iTunes record in her mailbox.
Okay. How are those bus tracks feeling on you right now?
There's a greyhound stamped on his ass right now.
Yeah, quite the
firestone on his leg.
Quite the tramp stamp you got there. It says greyhound.
Yeah, look at well, it,
oh,
and there
boy.
Is an actual greyhound.
Oh, so we're just waiting on Adam to call any moment now. I'm really interested in his work. First of all, I want to know how Sam Jackson got involved, because I just think in a book world right now where I think if you sell 10 books, you're on the bestsellers list.
Yeah.
Genius move. Genius move.
Yeah.
Whoever decided to publicize by getting someone like a Sam Jackson to read their book.
Right.
Genius.
Right.
Because here's the thing that I got a lot to ask Adam. I don't want to do it like I don't want to ask rhetorical questions when I can ask the real thing in like a minute.
Right.
But he has a very interesting career, and he's a very good writer. Very good. Like, and he writes interesting material. And I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I have not read any book but the one he just did, but I've read the reviews, and I've read the summaries, and I've read the back covers, and interesting topics he touches on. I'm wondering, I kind of want to know what kind of guy this guy is. And look, it is a lot harder for me to research for an author on this show.
Oh, yes.
Because reading books isn't like sitting down and watching an episode of Full House and interviewing Davy Cools.
Yeah, well.
Okay. It's not the same thing.
It might be a lot easier for me.
Well, wait. For our listeners out there, books are for reading. You open them.
Is that what they're for?
Yeah, you open them and there are words.
Top to bottom, left to right.
There are words.
Oh, yeah.
Top to bottom, left to right.
Or right to left in some cases.
Unless you're dyslexic, cool, but in the gang. Some of them range, for instance, Inside Scientology, written by Janet Reitman. On this show, I believe. I'm going to look at my calendar right now.
Next week.
Next Wednesday or next Thursday. Janet Reitman is next Wednesday. So, okay. So for someone like Janet Reitman, who wrote Inside Scientology, it's like 400-some pages. You read them, and you learn things. That's what a book is for my listeners.
Yeah. That's what that is, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, our guest has written some of them.
So you only read nonfiction?
I believe.
No, what I mean is
we can talk about that in a minute.
That's what I mean. You read the Inside Scientology, but do not read, like, fiction, you know, stories or anything?
No, I read some fiction, but I'm a nonfiction guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, this is Adam Mansbach.
Adam Mansbach. See,
okay.
I was right about the Mansbach. We were trying to make it to you know, intellectual.
Yeah.
Mansbach.
I said Mansbach.
Well, there's some disagreement. You know, other members of my family pronounce it in other ways, so it's anybody's guess, right?
I was going to say, though, if he's Jewish, maybe he doesn't like the Mansbach.
Yeah, there, I am Jewish. There is some of that resistance. You're right about that.
Yeah, I knew it. The man doesn't own a Volkswagen either, I'll tell you what.
No. I'll tell you that. No, Mercedes, of
Adam,
course.
I'm very happy to have you on the show, pal.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have some intellectuals on the show every now and then. Not that my acting friends aren't.
Yeah, right.
But they don't write the movies. They don't write the books. talk to us about your new book, Go the Fuck to Sleep. Or should I say Go the Bleep to Sleep? What is it?
No. If you're in a situation, you know, FCC-wise, where you can say Go the Fuck to Sleep, I'd highly encourage you to. I'm sick of doing shows where I have to, like, pretend that the book is called something else. You know what I mean?
No, I like that, but I saw Sam on Letterman, and they was like, and they didn't know what to say, and they were like, bleep to sleep, so I'm like,
right.
Do I call this thing here?
Right.
Yeah. But, no, the title is Go the Fuck to Sleep, and it's really started with me sort of staggering out of my daughter Vivian's bedroom one night last year when she was two after a marathon session trying to put her to sleep, and posting on Facebook, be on the lookout for my forthcoming children's book, Go the Fuck to Sleep. And I was just kind of joking around. I didn't, at the time, have any intention of writing that book. But as soon as I typed that in, it sort of dawned on me that I knew exactly what that book would look like and sound like. So I wrote it shortly thereafter.
Yes.
Well, I was so she wouldn't go to So is this like the phrase you were saying? Did you say it to her, or did you walk out of the room and you're just like muttering, "Go the fuck to sleep"?
Or did
you know, it probably ran through my mind at least 5 times a night, every night that I tried to put her to sleep. This was not an isolated occasion, put it that way.
No, yeah, there just wasn't some magical night when.
Yeah, no. No, in fact, the opposite is true. Like, I would always convince myself that maybe this was the night when it would all go super smoothly and it would take 15 minutes, you know?
And you had a night where you were just thinking, like, go the cock to sleep. No, that doesn't sound as good.
No, I wasn't exactly writing it in my mind. I was just trying to get through it with my sanity, you know?
Now let me ask you, Adam, this is a remedial question, but for us single 27-year-old men like myself who don't have kids, who don't have the family, how hard is it really to put your child to sleep? And, like, explain to me this process where you were so, like, frustrated, but yet creatively frustrated that you wrote this children's book.
Yeah, it's fucking excruciating sometimes. It doesn't sound like it should be. I mean, how hard could it be to lie on a bed in the dark? But, you know, the thing is, like, let me paint the picture for you. It's 7 o'clock. You go in there. You know, you've given her a bath, brushed your teeth and all that stuff. And, like, you read a story, look at your watch. It's 7:20. And you're like, okay, like, what I'm hoping to do tonight is not all that ambitious. I'm hoping to, like, watch a movie. You know, I'm hoping to watch a movie and have a conversation. But I can't do that until I get out of this room. So the kid wants to read another story. You make a game time decision. You're like, all right, I probably shouldn't read another story because she's just getting more into this thing and she's just going to want another one after that. I should just cut off the stories. But if I do that, she's going to cry and scream and it's going to be a big thing. So you read another story. Then you cut off the stories. It's quiet for like 30 seconds. And then she says, "Papa, sing me a song." And you look at your watch and it's 7:35 and you're like, all right, this is not going to be the night that I get out of the room quickly. You sing a song. You don't really have a song to sing, so you like, do your best. Then she asks you to make up a story. And it's a story specifically about when you and Uncle Matthew were little, and it should also involve a giant pangolin and a roller coaster.
Right.
And you're like, I don't have a fucking story like that. And now it's 7:45. You're realizing that, like, time is slipping away. You're closer to falling asleep than she is. Whatever. I don't mean to belabor the point. Fast forward. It's 9 o'clock. You stagger out of there. You've passed out 3 times. You had an argument with a 2-year-old, which is the type of argument that is unwinnable because there's no logic known to man that can pervade the consciousness of a 2-year-old. They just say why all the time. By the time you get out of the room, you're furious. You've got nothing left of your night. Your wife has already, like, passed out halfway. You know, the movie is out of the question. Sex is probably out of the question. You're hungry. You know, you're confused. You're dazed. You don't know what the hell to do with yourself. You end up eating, like, a bowl of ramen and, you know, passing out.
Wow.
It's always like that you see, like, in, like, movies and TV shows where, like, the cute little kid asks to tell a story and, like, the parent tells, like, the most perfect, beautiful story imaginable, and then, like, the kid is either asleep, one, or, like, the kid just agrees to shut up because the story was so good. You could just leave the room, like, hypothetically, because it was that good of a story.
Yeah, I mean, I would always try to make my stories as boring as possible because I'd want her to get so bored she would fall asleep.
Right.
So the story about, like, me and Uncle Matthew and the roller coaster and the giant pangolin would be like, me and Uncle Matthew and the giant pangolin took a ride on a roller coaster, then we got off the roller coaster and we all took a nap together. She'd be like, really? That story sucked. Like, tell a better one.
Now, Adam, I have a question for you then about, you take this idea to your publisher, or did you write it first? Because after the books you've written, this is kind of a detour from that. And what was your publisher's thoughts when you took this to them?
I took this actually to a different publisher. All my novels I've done with fairly big, you know, publishers, Doubleday and various random house imprints. This I wrote first. I wrote the whole thing really in a couple of afternoons, and I took it straight to Akashic Books, which is a kind of hip, edgy, independent publisher based in Brooklyn. Their motto is reverse gentrification of the literary world. And the publisher there, Johnny Temple, is a friend of mine. I've done a little bit of stuff with them, never a whole book of my own, but contributed to some of their anthologies and stuff. And I just had a feeling that he would get it if anybody did. And I was right. He was really into it. And we just went from there.
Now, you live in New York, right?
No, actually.
Oh, no. Where do you live?
Used to. I moved to California a few years ago, to Northern California, Bay Area. And actually, for the past couple of years, I've had a teaching job and I've been living in Philly.
Oh, well, what made you get into teaching?
It kind of fell in my lap. There's this, you know, if you write books and they're reasonably well-received, people tend to assume that you can teach writing. So I got a 2-year appointment at Rutgers University. My title was the New Voices Professor of Fiction, which I think just means I was, like, younger than the rest of the faculty.
Right.
And, yeah, I was there for 2 years teaching fiction to graduate students, or, you know, trying to.
What was the motto of that publishing house?
Reverse gentrification of the literary world.
Oh, that's great.
They are great. They're a fantastic house.
What was the company?
Akashic Books, it's called.
Oh. Isn't that the planet Chewbacca is from?
My first impulse was to tell you the planet that Chewbacca is from, but I don't need to, like, out myself as that big of a nerd.
No, I already did that for me, so.
You already knew? All right.
So, well, I was wondering, too, then, how does this get into, because I kind of looked at this as a great publicity move. How do you get this into Sam Jackson's hands, and how does Sam Jackson do the audiobook for you? What's that process like?
That was all handled by Audible.com, which is the company we sold the audio rights to. And they asked us to give them a list of people that we would have liked to hear do the audiobook. Sam Jackson was at the top of the list, kind of like pipe dream level. But it turned out that he was a fan of the book, and he jumped right on and did it. And it all happened really fast. Like, you know, on Monday we were asking them, or they were asking us for a list by, like, Wednesday. Sam was not only attached to do it, but had already recorded it, and by Thursday he was on the Letterman show reading it. So it was insane. It was one of many insane things that have happened in the past couple months.
Who else was on that list?
On my list for who I wanted to read the book?
Yeah.
Christopher Walken. Yeah. Werner Herzog, who actually did do a recording also for a live event we did, kind of a special recording. Who else was on my list? Bounty Killer. Cool G Rap. Some of these were more sort of personal fantasies of mine than others.
No Bronson Pinchot. No
Crispin Glover.
No Bob Saget.
Bob Saget would have been great.
Bob Saget. Well, yeah, he would have loved all the curse words. He would have said louder than the rest of the book.
Right.
That would have been excellent.
Now, talk to me, though, about how much of a departure was this from writing something like The End of the Jews? Was this a fun project then for you? Do you get together with the animators when you guys animate this? What is it like when you're writing a book like The End of the Jews and then you're writing Go the Fuck to Sleep?
Well, you know, writing a book like The End of the Jews was an incredibly lengthy process and, like, a really sort of painful one. I mean, a very much a soul-searching process where you're doing your best to get to the heart of what your character's real issues and real problems are. You're trying to create people who are as complicated and paradoxical as they can be. You're trying to sort of peel back layers of why a family is as fucked up as they are. A family that is not in some ways unlike my own, so there are, you know, sort of personal resonances. You know, you're trying to grapple with how one generation deals with another. You're doing historical research. You're trying to understand your own grandparents and then turn them into characters. You're doing a kind of anti-autobiographical writing where you're imagining a different direction that your own life could have gone, and maybe a darker and uglier one. So it's excruciating. It's grueling. it's, you know, the best and worst things about being a writer rolled up into one. You get to create a whole world, but then you're forced to live in that world. Go the Fuck to Sleep, I wrote in 2 afternoons, and, you know, it's 56 lines of poetry, and it was fun. You know, I did it with no expectations. I did it not necessarily even thinking that it was something I would publish. I just did it for the hell of it. And that's part of why all this success has been so fun, is because it's just me talking the type of shit that I've always talked, really. You know, it wasn't like I sat down and realized there was a baby boom going on, or analyzed, you know, a gap in the market or anything. I just did it because it seemed like a funny idea. I think because I'm a writer, I'm going to bring a certain sensibility to it. Like, it was important to me that that book, as short as it is, had an arc to it, had a beginning and a middle and an end to it, you know, had some precision to it in terms of trying to convey the emotions that the character is going through. But, you know, it's a very quick book to write. So it just is that initial burst of energy that gets you into a project also got me out of the project. Whereas with a novel, that initial burst of energy, a year or two into the project, you're like trying to remember what that initial burst of energy was so you can recapture it, so you can finish the thing.
Right. Well, I was also wondering, because, you know, we're more in the entertainment industry. I'm a comedian and writer, and we do stuff like that. So my way I looked at all this was, which of your books, the first question I had was, which of your books have you optioned to make into films, if any?
Well, Go the Fuck to Sleep, certainly.
So
was bought by Fox 2000, and 3 Arts Entertainment is producing, and they're moving forward, I think, pretty quickly on it. So that one, and my book Angry Black White Boy as well has been optioned a couple of times. It's a book that I think the people on the creative side of the industry are always attracted to, and the people who cut the checks are less thrilled with, because, like, the second half of the book is basically one big race riot.
Right. So I think when you write like you do, from what I've read about your novels, and I haven't gotten around to reading your novels yet, but all the reviews are fucking outstanding, and everyone tells me that you're a great writer. But my question about that was, do you find that when you write, you're writing for you and not for something to get made into a film or whatever? And that's kind of maybe sometimes why it's hard to make really good writing into films.
I think that's one reason. I mean, the more screenwriting I do, and that is something that I've started doing in the past couple of years, the more I realize how difficult and sometimes ridiculous it is to turn a novel into a movie. I mean, it's a screenplay is such a different animal. The form is so stripped down. It's so lean. I think it's rare that you can compress a novel effectively into a screenplay, even if it seems to fit, even if it has a 3-act structure. It's a harder thing to accomplish, I think, than people realize. I've never written a book with any intention of having it be made into a movie, although given the state of Hollywood right now, that's sort of how things are heading. I mean, nobody is trying to buy a spec script. Everybody wants to adapt existing material. Yeah. So I think the publishing industry, which is fucked up for any number of reasons right now, is kind of like figuring out how to reorganize itself around the needs of the film industry. There's a lot of people whose, you know, new goal is to write a book that gets turned into a movie. The problem is that often turns, you know, results in shitty literature, because, like, if it's blatantly transparent to the reader that you're doing this because you see it becoming a movie, you end up writing really shallow characters, and, you know, the things that work on screen don't work on the page necessarily. So it's tricky on all sides, I think.
Especially Go the Fuck to Sleep. I'm wondering how that could be filmed. Like, it'll be some sweeping epic with Daniel Craig and Stockard Channing, made by Ang Lee. I was like, how do you film this?
Yeah, no, it's going to be at least a 4.5-hour movie.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
Now, Adam, okay, since now we've discussed, now I read this book, Go the Fuck to Sleep, but in your mind, why should I or our listeners read something like The End of the Jews or something like What's angry? Is it angry black white boy or angry white
black boy? Yeah,
angry white black boy. So why should we read those books? What do you love about them?
You know, Angry Black White Boy was my way of trying to grapple with race and white privilege in this country. As somebody who grew up as a hip-hopper entrenched in that culture, whose consciousness around race and structural racism was forged in that, and who was looking to figure out a way to jumpstart a conversation on race that had really stalled almost to a standstill in my lifetime for a number of reasons that I'm not going to get into now. I wrote that book to try to put these things on the table in a way that was funny, that was palatable, that was satirical, but that also could make some serious points. So the book is a satire about an Afrocentric white kid named Macon who grows up in the late 80s and early 90s, sort of politicized by hip-hop in the age of Public Enemy and Boogie Down Productions, and develops a kind of critique of whiteness, of white privilege, that's very pronounced to the point where when he moves to New York City to start driving a cab, the entitlement of these white businessmen that he keeps picking up starts to piss him off, and he starts robbing white people at gunpoint in his cab, calling them white devils and throwing them out on the street and taking their neckties and their wallets. And although he's perfectly visible in the cab, nobody can quite compute what's going on. The idea of a white kid committing racially motivated crimes against white people doesn't make any sense. So instead, word goes out that some kind of crazy militant black cab driver is sticking up white people. So New York City is sort of thrown into a panic, and white people won't take cabs anymore, which means black people can finally get cabs. And Macon ends up getting arrested. He becomes sort of infamous, and he ends up using his newfound fame to call for a national day of apology, based on a kind of tongue-in-cheek statement in Malcolm X's autobiography about how white people should just walk up to black people on the street and apologize. And for Macon, you know, for Malcolm, this is like a rhetorical statement. Macon is like, we're going to do the shit on Friday. So people pour into the city from all over the country to participate in this kind of well-intentioned, ill-considered, and ultimately disastrous day of apology, and things kind of go crazy from there.
See, and just like that, I'm sold. I want to.
Yeah,
I want to. My
long ass elevator pitch.
Not even bullshitting you. Now I'm gonna read it. But we're gonna make it the book club pick.
We should.
All right.
The Matthew Aaron Show book club.
Yeah, I don't know how many people read on this show, but
well, I drove a cab.
I read.
Adam, are there enough pictures in this book to get people on my show to keep interested?
Yeah. Well, if you can't pick up the market of like bored housewives, then you won't sell tons of books, because that's like 80% of books that come out now that are fiction are for like people who are home taking care of their families.
Well, the other reason though I'm really interested in Adam's work now is I get this feeling you are writing. And you may not, you probably didn't even do this on purpose, but I feel like our generation, being 27, being 25, like Steve and Alex, these are the kind of books that we would be really into.
Yes.
These are the kind of stories that we would really like. Let me bring up another book that I wanted you to talk about, Genius B-Boy Cynics Getting Weeded in the Garden of Delights.
Yeah.
About that. And this is a book where I read the synopsis and I'm like, everyone my age would want to read this. So,
I'm glad to hear that, man. That's a poetry collection. I mean, that's basically all the poetry I had written in my, to that point that I felt was good enough to publish. I published that in like 2002.
Yeah.
Around the time that I published my first novel. I agree. I mean, I think there aren't that many novels out right now, works of fiction in general, that appeal to our generation. I'm a little bit older than you guys. I just turned 35. But, you know, for a lot of reasons, I think our generation is not producing a ton of great novels. Right. It's partly, I think, because people are doing other things, right? Because, like, what kind of schmuck becomes a novelist when all the big money is in writing for TV or writing for the movies?
Right. Well, I mean, should we have
whatever, and, you know, inventing an iPhone app, you know? Right. I think narrative storytelling is kind of back on its heels right now.
But I talked to someone who read your poetry in Genius B-Boy Cynics, and I was you were compared to by my friend to Mos Def. That is the kind of lyricist that he compared you to, which I thought was a huge compliment.
Yeah, that's very flattering. Please thank him for me.
I will, and that got me interested in it. And, you know, I also wanted to talk about, you have some upcoming appearances or anything like that, any readings, any lectures, anything like that going on?
I do have a little bit of stuff. You know, one of the things that was crazy with Go the Fuck to Sleep is that it wasn't supposed to come out until October, and we moved it up to June because there was this all this attention and pre-publication hype and viral this and that. So we moved it up to June, which meant that we didn't really have a lot of events planned. So we're kind of just getting our shit together now to do events. I'm doing something in D.C. tomorrow at a private party of some kind that I'm a little bit unclear on. I'm probably not going to understand until I get off the plane. In the fall, when I come back to California, I'm doing a ton of stuff in the Bay and also in L.A. I don't know the dates offhand, but like around October, things will really kick into gear, and I'll be doing a bunch of stuff in California. My website, adammansbach.com, will have details on it, and the book's website, gothefftosleep.com, should be updated too. So I am starting to get out there and do some gigs. I've done a bunch of stuff in Boston and New York so far. That's been a lot of fun.
Well, I did want you to tell our audience too, because I also think they'd be very interested in this. What is the Kodiak Brinks Septet, and who's Kodiak Brinks?
So Kodiak Brinks is an alias of mine. That was the Septet was a band I put together for an album that I did around 2005. I think we recorded it in 2005. And it was kind of a hip-hop jazz fusion kind of thing. I've been emceeing since I was a little kid, since probably about 1986. And I've also been hanging out with a lot of jazz musicians for most of my life. I was a roadie for many years for the late, great Elvin Jones, who was a drummer who was, maybe the best drummer who ever lived, like, ever on this planet. And that's not just my opinion, but kind of a widespread one. He was John Coltrane's drummer throughout the 60s, just a giant on his instrument, an innovator, and a wonderful, wonderful guy. So I traveled the world with him, you know, setting up his drums and opening his wine bottles, and getting really close with him and with a lot of, you know, members of his band and guys that I met out there. I was also researching my first novel, which was largely about jazz. And anyway, I started hanging out with a lot of young jazz musicians, and so this album was sort of an attempt to bridge the gap between jazz and hip-hop, which is something a lot of people have tried to do, but for me, a lot of times it's felt forced. Like, a lot of these collaborations aren't that collaborative because the people involved in it are separated by generations, or they're not actually even in the studio together really collaborating, and it feels like a little bit shallow. So that album was an attempt to, you know, do something that was a little different.
Who are some of your favorite acts in music right now, Adam? Who are some of the ones that inspire you today?
In terms of hip-hop or in general?
In general. Hip-hop, too.
It's a good question. I'm not as up on stuff as I'd like to be, particularly now because I'm so busy running around with this book. But, I'll say this. I mean, this isn't like the newest, you know, thing on the block. But right now I'm sort of deeply saddened by the loss of Gil Scott-Heron, who passed away about 2 months ago. And he's always been one of my favorite musicians. I think he's a genius and really under-acknowledged. He's best known for The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, which is this sort of proto-spoken word, proto-hip-hop track he recorded in 1971. That's a wonderful song, but it's a little misleading because, I mean, this is a guy who was a beautiful songwriter and singer and probably the most astute political musician in the history of this country. I mean, from 1970 to about 1985, the peak of his career, there's like not an issue that he didn't comment on with incredible insight, from, you know, environmental stuff to apartheid to abortion to critiques of the Nixon administration, the Reagan administration. I mean, he just got everything right and managed to be funky and was never didactic. And he passed away a couple months ago after a long, long battle with drugs and, you know, just had a really a tough time of it, but left us with an incredible amount of great music.
So you're really into that, like, jazz poetry style.
Sometimes. I mean, a lot of the time it makes me want to punch people in the face.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. But that's exactly how I feel. Like, man, this percentage of it is so good and so important and so real, and then the rest of it is so self-serving and congratulatory and just calling attention to itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the spoken word scene that emerged in the early 90s, you know, I was kind of a part of it. I performed at those venues, and I saw a lot of the people emerge from it. And it began as, you know, very much an alternative space. Hip-hop was becoming kind of more, you know, materialistic and harder to relate to for a lot of people. So poetry was like this alternate thing. But very quickly, it developed its own orbit and, like, people realized they could be stars doing that, and everybody started sounding a certain way. And, you know, the poetry voice where, you know, people, no matter what they're talking about, start to sound like this.
Yeah.
And you're like, yo, I'm leaving. Like, I'm out of here. This sucks.
Now, Adam, what kind of you said you were working on getting you started writing screenplays.
Yeah.
So we're talking film here, and what kind of film are you interested in writing? Do you have a specific kind of genre you want to write for, or is it more of you basically the same kind of style you have with your writings, where it's very personal and like that?
Yeah, it's a little bit all over the map. I mean, I've written a couple of things that are like smaller, indie kind of things. One is called Panarea. And it takes place on a Greek island. You know, it's a couple of couples who are on vacation. It's very low key. It's it's funny, but it's you know, exactly the kind of movie that's like very hard to get made. Adam Balalo is supposed to direct it, and Jim Jarmusch is executive producing it, and we're looking to cast it now. But you know, it's an uphill climb even with people like that involved. I'll do some shit like that. I'm also, you know, somebody who is enamored of like 80s action movies, and I would love to do something that is like a big blockbuster summer, you know, tentpole movie. The kind of thing that's like smart if you're smart and good, dumb, fun if you're an idiot, you know?
So I
have a lot of different interests when it comes to screenwriting. And you know, a bunch of different projects I'm sort of trying to juggle right now.
So it's wild that you brought that up. What are some of your favorite 80s action movies, Adam? And who is your 80s action star?
Who's
you know
your go-to?
Yeah, who is your guy?
Bruce Willis,
there you go.
So, but I have a feeling you even are like, if striking distance is on.
Yeah. I'm going to say you're a big Point Break fan.
You know what's my favorite incredibly underrated action movie from the 80s. Actually, it's probably from the early 90s. I think it's from 1990. But even more obscure than Striking Distance, which I actually watched again a couple years ago, and it's like pretty awesome, is Hudson Hawk.
Yeah, Hawk.
Hudson
Hawk is an incredible movie that I think went over everybody's head when it came out because they didn't know what the hell to make of it.
Well, it's funny because the Kurt Russell movie, Big Trouble Little Chinatown.
That's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Trouble in Little China, right.
Yeah, Hudson Hawk kind of has the same vibe.
It does, but it's much smarter, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
But people weren't getting Hudson Hawk for whatever reason. But that era of film was just fantastic. You had guys like Shane Black who were coming up in that era. And
yeah, I love Shane Black.
He's the best. Did you enjoy Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Yeah, very much.
Oh yeah, and I was very happy to hear he got the gig to direct Iron Man 3. I think for him.
I think that'll be interesting.
Long overdue.
That is good news.
Yeah, he's a good writer. So I really want to see then Adam's 80s action movie. I got it.
Yeah, you know, I'm doing something right now that I have a graphic novel coming out. The next thing I'm publishing is a graphic novel that is sort of in some ways a tribute and a raising of the stakes, an attempted raising of the stakes on that whole genre. It's called Nature of the Beast. And it's like a sci-fi action adventure kind of thing that it's been in process for a really long time because it's like a 250-page like comic book style full color thing. So I wrote it a long time ago, but it's been illustrated over the past 2.5 years by a great illustrator named Owen Brosman. And it's finally going to come out in February, and I'm like really psyched about it.
Oh, you've got a lot of projects on the burners there.
Yeah, well, it beats starving to death.
Yeah. It does beat starvation.
I was just going to say, I'm kind of hungry.
But it's easy for you. You live in Northern California. You just, what, do you fly or do you drive down to L.A. all the time? What do you like to do there?
I mean, it's been 3 years, actually, since I've been at my home in Northern California. I've been in Philly. So from Philly, I definitely fly to L.A.
Yeah. Well, you've been busy.
Yeah. I've been busy. You know, I mean, I got really lucky with Go the Fuck to Sleep, and it's been a lot of fun. But, like, if that hadn't happened, I would be hustling my ass off right now because my job would have just ended, and I would be like, yo, it's time to sell something or you know, get a real job.
Well, I tell you what, though, good thing that you wrote that book because it introduced us to you, and I'm embarrassed that I was not introduced to you before that, really.
Right.
But some of my friends knew of you as I spoke of, and I'm very happy now that we've been introduced to you. I really am. I think you're a talented guy, and it sounds like you have a great creative mind for the business. That's for sure.
I hope so. The business is a wild business, so yeah. Can only hope for the best on that.
Well, I'm looking forward to this graphic novel because I'm a big comic book guy. I've had enough of the comic book movies, though, I got to tell you.
Yeah, well,
I've had enough.
They're all superhero movies.
It's the same fucking movie over and over and over. Like, I mean, I'm a huge Captain America fan, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow, but I saw it, and I was bored. Chris Evans was just no good. Like, that is a movie that needed Dennis Quaid in the 80s.
Yeah, really. Well, I feel like they feel essentially like the key, they can just storyboard every panel and film it, and then they have a comic book movie.
Yeah, it seems like that.
You know?
Adam, are you into the comic book movies at all?
I watch them all, but like you said, most of them are pretty bad.
Yeah.
But I keep hoping for the best, and I keep checking them out. But you know, we're just in a creative ebb right now. I think in terms of Hollywood, it's like I was just out there to do a bunch of meetings about Nature of the Beast and other projects. And you know, you're in these situations sometimes where you're sitting in a room listening to somebody talk about a movie that they just made, and you can tell that. There's no possible way they could be proud of the movie. Like, they're trying to sound proud of it. They're happy that it made it to the screen. But on, like, a deeper level, they know it's a piece of shit. It got made because the math worked out. They knew they could sell it, you know, for this much in the UK and this much in Germany. They're sitting pretty. It hasn't come out yet, but they know they're going to make their money back. Everybody's happy. Nobody's going to get fired. Nobody's going to get promoted either. And they talk about it like they're enthusiastic, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I haven't been in those rooms too much. I'm just looking at some of these folks who are saying these things about these certain movies, and I'm like, you clearly know how shitty this movie is. And you knew that from the very beginning, and nobody involved in the process at any point, none of the 7 screenwriters, nobody was ever genuinely excited about this shit. It's been totally sort of cynical from the very beginning, and that comes through. It comes through on screen, you know?
Well, I was wondering, as a guy like, you know, I was wondering if you look at movies the same way I do. When I go to a movie, I went to see Captain America, and I guess because, you know, when you write and when you act, you kind of have a different mindset, but I'm watching this movie, and I'm just like, you know, Stanley Tucci's in it, and they give him nothing really to do. He's the same character, then he's done. Tommy Lee Jones. There's no character arcs. There's no arcs. There's no reason for me to care about these people. And I was kind of wondering, how do you look at a movie then when you watch it being a writer?
Yeah, I think I do. I tell my students all the time that everything begins and ends with character. And a lot of movies seem to have forgotten that. So I'm often just stunned that things this crappy make it to the screen, and not only make it to the screen, but like are raking in the money and seem to be passing for good entertainment to a lot of people, or a lot of people are getting fooled into watching it and then walking out feeling like they just wasted 2 hours of their lives. Right. I mean, the number of sort of meaty roles with some complexity and some paradox and some nuance that are being offered to actors these days seems very, very low. You know, I can imagine I mean, I'm not on that side of the business, but like trying to play a character and add some depth to it when there's none on the page and there's none in the story has got to be a very frustrating challenge.
Yeah. You know what I was just thinking too, totally off topic, but that's how my brain is. I never promote someone else's show, but you know, Adam's got to do the Kevin Pollak chat show.
Yeah.
He's got to do it. Yeah. We need to hook you up with that.
I would love that. He actually did a reading of Go the Fuck to Sleep as Christopher Walken. That was amazing.
Fantastic.
I saw that as Chris Walken, yes. And I'm like, he should totally do that.
Which I think is bizarre because I see no reason the real Christopher Walken won't do it.
Oh,
I'm not sure that he wouldn't. He may not have been approached, you know.
Oh well,
I would love to do Kevin Pollak's thing. He's great. I think he's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I hate promoting that bastard. No, I love him, but no, he does a good show. And I would just be very interested in Kevin's questions for Adam. I should contact Sam Levine about that and tell him you should do that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Thanks.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know, Adam, what else do you got to promote? You got anything else?
I have a bunch of stuff, but you know, I have a new novel that I just finished. I didn't really tell you guys what Nature of the Beast was about, though. I could tell you that if you want.
Yeah, I didn't want to ask because I didn't know how secretive it was.
Right.
I didn't know if it was.
I've whittled the pitch down. I wrote it with a buddy of mine, Douglas McGowan, and we've been talking about it to people for like probably 7 years. And it used to be that like people would ask us about it at a party, and then we would talk for 45 straight minutes. I won't do that. it's considerably shorter. Basically, Nature of the Beast is about an interspecies gladiator tournament being held to determine who is Earth's most powerful animal and who will defend Earth in one-on-one gladiator combat against a race of hostile aliens on its way to destroy the planet. That's the premise. And the hero is an alligator trainer from the Florida Everglades named Bruno Bolo. And the situation is that the only person who knows why this gladiator tournament is being held is the guy throwing it, who's kind of a megalomaniac media baron, like a Rupert Murdoch meets Lex Luthor kind of guy named Mylon Marlowe. A faction of aliens has contacted him in the hopes that he can help save the planet. And they've told him what's going to happen. So he's throwing this tournament where, you know, polar bears are fighting sharks, are fighting gorillas, are fighting rhinos, and there aren't supposed to be humans involved in it at all. But Bruno, our hero, inadvertently gets hooked on this very powerful kind of hormone spray that's given to the animals to get them excited and aggressive. And in this state, he jumps into the ring in front of, you know, 100,000 screaming fans on this distant island to defend his alligator, the Duke, which is getting its ass kicked by a gorilla. And he kills the gorilla. And at this makes him a contestant. And before it's all over, he has to fight a shark, and he has to confront these aliens, and a lot of other crazy shit happens as well. But that's basically what Nature of the Beast is about.
See, why can't they film that? I would go to see that movie.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to one of these days.
That is quite the tent pole right there.
Yeah.
That's what I keep saying, you know.
Wow, that's the next Transformers. But you know what's wild about that? That is what is lacking, you know.
Don't insult his work.
No,
like that.
You have to go out and you have to get a toy and then you have to make a movie of it, or you got to remake something or whatever.
Yeah.
Here is an original.
Actually, that's why we're doing it as a graphic novel, because selling it as a script isn't going to happen. If it comes out as a graphic novel first, maybe Hollywood's interested, you know?
You should do an actual novel out of it.
Because you got to show these assholes. You got to show these assholes, like, basically everything in order for them to get what it is.
Right.
You
have to draw them a picture.
If you wrote the script, Adam, they'd all be like, what the fuck's going on here? If you show it to them, they're like, oh, and I could totally see that scene and this and that.
Oh, yeah, that's how he fights the shark without drowning.
Right.
That's wild, though, man. That's great. I do wish you the best of luck with that. I want to you for teaching. I think it's very important.
Yeah.
I think the fact that you do that for other writers is amazing. Yeah, I just want to say, from doing this interview, you're a stand-up guy, man. I really enjoy talking to you. You're a good guy.
I think we learned a lot in this interview.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. And if you're ever in L.A., we're going to be out in L.A. in a few months. We're moving out there. You're more than welcome to sit in with us anytime, Adam, and do a roundtable.
That would be a lot of fun. I'll probably be out there in a couple months, so I'd love to do it.
We'll be out there in December, so we'll be ready to go.
Okay, cool. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Adam. And the book is Go the Fuck to Sleep. The website is adammansbach.com, ADAMMANSBACH.com. I read that like the worst. Like when you give the telephone number out on the answering machine, 444-5233288.
You did a Kevin James over there.
Right.
Oy,
that was good.
All right. No. Adam, thank you so much, Adam. Pal.
All right.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
He didn't mention, Adam, he's also opening a restaurant, a theme park, and his own library got dedicated to him. So,
let's take a small break. That was a very good interview, but I'm exhausted because of all the intellect that was going. It was a very thinky.
I'm not.
Like yeah,
good.
We know how you are.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, facets called. They want their pretension back. All right, we're going to take a small break. We'll be right back with Lee and Steve as well.
If you could only see the way she loves me, then maybe you would understand why I feel this way without our love and what I must do. If you could only see how blue her eyes can be when she says she loves me. Well, you got your reason. And you've got your life. And you've got your manipulations. They cut me down to size. Say you know, but you don't. You love, but you won't. If you kid on that yeah.
loop there.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good on the.
No, we're not wrestling.
So I think Adam Mansbach's next book should be the sequel, Get a Fucking Job.
Yeah.
Right?
For older people.
Horacio Ramirez gave me that one today. He tossed me that easy layup today.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you, Horacio.
Please, like he's talented. Oh, I love Horatio. I kid because I love.
You think abusive fathers say that as well? Yeah. I beat because I love.
I hit because I don't hate that much.
So I don't know what we said the first 30 minutes of the show, but now E! Online is following us on Twitter.
No way. Okay. Oh, well.
E! They're all over us. They want to do that. I told you, Tobias.
First of all, can I make a complaint? I object to the E! Network using an exclamation mark after itself. E is a perfectly strong vowel and does not need exclamation.
How teenage girls talk. Everything's screaming. And girls in their 20s too. You chicks are with the teen girls. Everything is like extra letters at the end and 8 exclamation points. Like, yeah. Good morning. Like 8 G's.
I only put up with an LOL if I get sent some nudie pics ahead of time.
I won't put
up with it otherwise.
I don't blame you.
If you want to LOL me, you were sending me some boobies.
Oh boy, does that let's hope it's just for chicks.
I'm just saying.
Do you have dudes sending you the LOL as well?
Why do people say laughing out loud? If you're laughing out loud, you don't need out loud. You're laughing. Just should be laughing.
No. Well, I guess you can do it softly. I guess you could do it in your head. You know, like people that are like, I thought it was funny.
Yes, but that would be a chuckle or
a
guffaw.
I thought it was funny. Or maybe they don't even chuckle or guffaw, though. Maybe they just go, I thought it was funny.
Some people do that.
So they need to tell you that not only do they think it's funny, but they thought it was so funny
that they
actually used the action of laughter.
I don't know. I'm not going to question the internet talk. It's way over me.
These kids today with their
internets and
their internets and their Volkswagen Golf leases and their
we do not support Volkswagen on this show.
Not at all. Mercedes though.
No, we don't promote Mercedes either. They're out.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. I mean, the Germans don't get along.
Don't get along, no. No BMW?
No. Oh, out. BMWs are first of all, the only two kind of people that drive BMWs are chicks.
Oh, boy.
I like
and dudes that want to be chicks.
Oh, boy.
I like chicks.
I know a couple of...
That's it.
You sure that's
Pat
it?
Pat DiStefano.
You know what? I'm gonna
Alex Luisi. Chicks.
Oh, boy.
Right. Or want to be chicks.
Oh, boy.
I'm just saying. Okay, because here's the thing. Alex claims he has a girlfriend, so what does he need a fucking BMW for?
Right.
So I heard his brother Rick's using it to, like, drive around, pick up all his ladies. But he has a girlfriend, too. What do all you single men...
Don't you have a BMW when you have a tiny cock, though?
That could be true. DiStefano, though. DiStefano is single. And the only time I ever see him with a girl in his car is when we made him drive home Nicole on Sunday night to the city. Other than that, I don't think. Oh, his cousin. Well, I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Why not?
You can ask him yourself tomorrow night. Pat DiStefano will be here live. I'm sure our listenership just went through the roof. People are like, I gotta tune in Wednesday and call all my friends.
You know what? I would love to hear someone call in and ask, you guys said this a week ago on the air. Is that true?
I don't take phone calls, though. Only from my sister, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, well.
Because she,
wonder why.
Well, because what happens is if I don't answer her calls, then she calls Ma, and then Ma screams downstairs, your sister's been calling. Pick up the phone.
The aggravation installment plan you have with snubbing.
Yep.
You are sunk for life.
Yeah.
Okay, I am going to make a phone call right now, though.
Okay.
Because we have a show to do here, people.
Is that what's going on?
No.
I thought this was...
Alex, I'm sorry. I implied that you have a tiny cock. Boy, apologizing on the air is even worse than bringing it up.
Yeah, you don't want to say sorry to anyone
on
the air.
Who says that?
Yeah, don't do that.
Who says that Turzo has a tiny cock?
No, but nobody said that.
I did. No. Right now.
So I don't think he would be the one to tell you. He probably can't see it.
Oh,
we said that before. That's been said on this show before.
No, never. I've never heard that before.
Come on.
I've never.
It's only when I say it.
Lee's going to get banned from another night in the studio now.
You got to be everyone's friend here.
I am everyone's friend.
We're all about friends here.
We're best friends.
As Alex told me yesterday, I'm friends with everyone.
Yeah, he does say that.
Hello.
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 You.
Hello.
Welcome to Movie Phone.
Who's this?
Who's this?
Is your refrigerator running?
Let me check.
Pat, do some promoting for this week's show, would you?
Yes, Pat.
Who's on this week's? Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure.
So, what do we got Wednesday and Thursday, pal?
I'm trying to think of who's on the show. Tomorrow, isn't it Kira Sultanovich?
It is, which I have to do a blurb for.
That is correct.
I got a blurb.
And then we have Ron Zimmerman, day after.
Thursday. I'm very pumped about Ronnie Zims. Kira Sultanovich, for those that are listening, she's for our male audience, she's smoking hot. For our female audience and male audience, she's also a very funny comedian who has done a few specials on Showtime and appears about twice a month on Jay Leno. So, that's Kira. Ron Zimmerman, what to say about...
You need an introduction.
What to say about... Well, here's the thing. I bet... All right, I am going to promise my fans this. Even if you don't know who Ron Zimmerman is, please listen to the show Thursday, because you'll never forget.
Right.
You'll never forget Ron Zimmerman after Thursday, but I'll give you the short version. Ron Zimmerman is a writer in Hollywood. He wrote on Charles in Charge. He wrote on VIP, The Michael Richards Show, My Wife and Kids. Till Death. Sorry, I had something.
Bad cold
throat.
Over there, yeah.
Oh,
poor Brad Garrett.
It's the white elephant in the room, so I can't not say it. He is Cher's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is
his boyfriend.
Oh, is that
of
so?
Cher.
You're going to want to listen to that show.
And he has done a lot of work with Artie Lang and folks on Howard Stern back in the day. Haven't heard him on in a while. I do know he also writes comics now. He's just he's another writer like Manback who's all over the board. So we're looking forward to Ron Zimmerman.
Yeah, should be good.
He used to be a stand-up, I believe, as well. He does have a history of depression, so we're hoping for a good day.
Yeah, well, I'll have a bit to talk about with him for that.
And rumor is Jay Leno saved his life.
Wow.
I'm going to get into this Thursday, but the story goes Ron Zimmerman wanted to kill himself on Christmas Eve one year. And Jay Leno called him, invited him over, and that was that.
Another Christmas miracle.
By Jay Leno.
By Santa Claus.
Every time Jay Leno stops a person from killing himself, an angel gets its wings.
Yes. I will tell you, I see Ron on Facebook a lot, and now I know he's going out with Cher now, but before he was going out with Cher, I'm pretty sure he was just on Facebook to find chicks.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
But he found Cher.
Who is the trophy of all chicks.
You know what? They go good together, though.
They
I
do.
Love Ron's style with the long hair and the crazy hats and the... I'm just a Ron Zimmerman guy. You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Larry Charles.
Larry Charles, yeah.
He reminds
me
of Larry Charles. Very much so of Larry Charles.
Kind of a dark humor as well.
Darker. Ron's a dark man.
Good. Darker than Larry Charles.
Ron is dark man.
Yes, he is dark man. Right. He also acts too. He does everything.
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Ron Zimmerman. So I think I hopefully just sold everyone on Ron Zimmerman.
Is Cher on Facebook?
Doubtful.
No.
She's on Twitter.
She is.
There's.
I told you this.
There's going to be a lot of share talk on Thursday.
I'm not.
Folks.
I don't want to rat share out.
I wouldn't.
Book.
Yeah, don't.
All right, we'll put it this way. She's on the book. You'll never find her, though.
Okay.
That's how I'll put it. You will never find her. She's also on Twitter, which you can find her and follow her. But we're not interviewing Cher Thursday. We're interviewing Ronnie Zimz. I really don't want to bring up Cher that often.
Okay.
Well, maybe. I do want to kind of know about, you know. I don't like asking our guests about their sex lives.
I was going to say.
But this one.
Yeah, this is kind of special.
But you see, but Cher's going to listen to it when she comes back from her trip. Do I want Cher to think I'm a perv?
But sex talk on the show is always big. I mean, that kind of it when our guests actually
you only get one chance with Cher. Let's just put it
right.
That way.
I'm with Steve. Steve and I listen to like a 3-hour long Ron Zimmerman interview because we do all our research.
We do.
And
speaking of,
Ron is not afraid to talk sex, but I'm afraid to talk sex with Ron because I don't want Cher to. Never do my show.
Did we?
I want to get invited to a Kathleen Griffin barbecue.
What do you think they're listening to at that BBQ? What are they listening to?
Cher.
Yeah.
Oh no! Did we decide on a? Oh, never mind. I don't. I can't say this on the air. The remake. Did we want to? Do we want to broach that now or leave it for Thursday?
Is there a remake?
So Pat,
no. Remember like the list of movies.
We're gonna do that Thursday. Right. We're gonna do that Thursday as well.
All right. No longer.
We have a lot of things prepped for Thursday, and my friend Kira is on tomorrow, and I'll reminisce with her about the time she touched my chest hair, even though she's married.
On a very special Matthew Aaron show.
Oh, it was special for me. Because I tend to wear shirts with my buttons open.
You do, right.
I forgot Tobias is on the phone. Are you there, Pat?
I was trying to get him to say something.
I'm still here.
I'm still here. Hey, did you like the interview with Adam? Did I do okay?
I thought it was very classy.
No, I don't care about that. Yeah. Did I do okay?
Yes, you did. You got to do better research on your people.
No, I don't.
If you have an author on, don't tell him you've never read his books.
I'm supposed to lie to him and tell him I have read his books, and then when he's like, "What's your favorite part?" I go,
right.
"The one with the Jew."
I don't think you should.
And the guy.
I don't think you should lie about that. But you can. You don't have to come out right and say I've never read it. But you shouldn't lie. I mean, you shouldn't lie and say you have. That's phony baloney stuff, right, Pat? Don't you agree?
Yeah, I agree. But you know, you gotta. It's your guest. You gotta give a shit.
I did give a shit.
A lot of shit was given.
You didn't see me give a
you
shit.
You brought up all kinds. Well, first of all,
I'm just saying.
And let me tell you something else. You read 300-500-page books in the week you gave me to prepare for this guy. And on top of it, did I not get all our listeners interested in his other work by asking about it because I didn't know about it?
Yeah.
We got the Williams sisters here playing tennis between Pat and Matt over here. It's quite the tennis volley.
So I'm now fighting with Caesar because he goes, it's public knowledge that Cher is going out with Ron Zimmerman because it's on Wikipedia. Listen, Momo. You think Ron Zimmerman or Cher went to Wikipedia and said we're dating? Someone else heard it somewhere and put it on there.
Clearly,
Cher and Ron Zimmerman, I don't think really talk about it.
Clearly, someone hasn't seen that Colbert report where he pretty much says how phony baloney Wikipedia is.
It is.
Yeah.
You might want to watch.
Put anything up.
You might want to watch some Colbert report.
But I mean, Cher goes out of her way on Twitter to talk to Ron Zimmerman like they're schoolyard chums, not like they're, you know.
Sucking face.
Right. Thank you. That was actually way more polite than what I was going to say.
That was polite. it makes me think of On Golden Pond.
But, yeah, it's not that open of information because neither of them. I think Ron may have admitted it on Stern, but I know him and Cher supposedly broke up a few months ago. They got back together now. Mm-hmm. But they supposedly broke up a few months ago, and Stern wanted to have him on A1 do it, I guess, or whatever.
Well, you aren't like the Maury Povich show. You don't need to delve into relationships.
Well, I'm just saying it's not that out there. It's not that open. So our listeners are getting – we're going to get the clarification on that at least Thursday.
Because if there's one thing that we want to convey to the listeners, it's that we have all the facts straight.
Well,
because they know to get their news from us.
You know what's weird? Let me just be completely honest. – I don't give a shit if who he's dating is Cher or not.
Yeah.
I love Ron Zimmerman. I'm a big Ron Zimmerman guy. I actually, I don't mean to say this like a dick, because I love Cher too, but I think Cher's lucky to have Ron Zimmerman. That's
Ooh.
My opinion.
Oh,
no, I'm just all saying.
Right,
I'm just saying Ron
okay.
Zimmerman is an original fella. He is a, but so Cher.
Cher, if you're out there and you're listening, according to Matt, you are goddamn lucky.
Yeah.
To have that
Ron
man.
Zimmerman, he's a class act. He's yes. a good guy.
No
he's
one says
funny.
He wasn't. No one says he wasn't.
Why don't you date him?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, man. I was waiting for somebody to say something.
I do talk about Ron Zimmerman a lot on this show.
You do?
There is a man love
oh,
thing.
Oh, well, just
there.
In general. The other day, look, I'm like, what's up, Matt? He's like, nothing, Ron Zimmerman. He's just dropping it all over.
Look, he has the cool long hair that I could only wish I'd have at that age. He dresses any way he wants. He talks about whatever the fuck he cares about talking about. Like, the guy has problems, and he's open about it. I don't know. He's a cool dude. I'm really into him.
He's like your cool uncle or something. Like,
yeah.
Your dad's uptight, and he's, like, going to get you high for
he
the
told,
first time.
Yeah. He's like Adam. Adam that was just on. Admits that the business is bullshit.
Yes.
Ron does the same thing.
I love
You that. Really think Ron wants to write for the Disney Channel?
God,
he doesn't
no.
to pay the bills.
Yeah. He writes for the Disney Channel?
Yeah. He has a new show on there.
Oh, man.
He has a new show.
Oh God. Yeah, he looks like an iCarly fan.
Well, we'll get into it Thursday. Thursday's going to be a really interesting show.
Yeah.
And I think also on Thursday I may have my legal analyst come on to talk about Rupert Murdoch. So it'll be a pretty loaded show.
Good.
It'll be the show wow. Pierce Morgan wishes
you got yourself
Thursday.
A legal analyst. You are just moving on.
Hollywood
out.
Reporter.
Yeah.
Legal analyst has fought many Supreme Court cases.
The Matthew Aaron Show legal team.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we had the Jeffersons theme.
I do have my own legal analyst now.
Yeah. Play some Jeffersons theme. You are moving on up.
Yeah. Can I ask you something and don't go, oh,
uh-oh.
Oh, oh.
Yeah.
Here we
is
go.
A legal analyst a lawyer?
Yes. Yeah, so what okay. they usually are is.
It don't sound like a lawyer.
What they usually are is former full-time lawyers who are no longer full-time lawyers.
Okay, all right.
So what they did was they were lawyers who kind of wormed their way into being public figures, and they're called legal analysts because they give their opinions on TV shows.
Okay, I was just asking that. I never know what I'm going to say
that's
going to set people off.
No, he's a lawyer. Right. He's a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer.
I said a couple minutes ago he's tried many Supreme Court cases.
Oh.
So he has done some law.
just a little bit.
A little bit.
Done himself some of the law.
Yeah, some of that law of work.
So when's legal analyst Len Cannata going to be on?
Yeah,
as a...
maybe they could compare legal strategies.
I decided I'm going to change Lenny's theme song, though.
What's his theme song going
to
be?
It used to be the Godfather
right.
theme, but not anymore.
What's it going to be?
I just want to see Lenny dance like Tony Danza.
You stay away from that Judith Light.
Oh, you know what was funny, too? Speaking of Tony Danza, you know Matt Walsh, who we had on last Thursday?
Right.
His new Twitter pictures, him and Tony Danza.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Don't tell your good buddy, who is it, that Todd Glover, who didn't like
Toddy
your,
Gloves.
Who didn't
Toddy
like Gloves. Your Tony Danza love?
Whatever. Glover's a ball buster. He's a good guy. He's a good guy. I like Todd Glover. That John Griffin, on the other hand. No.
Oh.
He's a good guy, too. He's a good guy, too. I never said these guys were funny, but they're good guys. They're good guys.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. One day, hey, fingers crossed, they'll be funny. One day, maybe for Christmas, I'll send them a gift, and it'll be the laughter of humor or whatever.
You sound like the end of a Disney movie with that.
I'm just saying. One day, maybe they'll be funny.
Oh, that's funny. Now that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way you put that is that's very good.
But they're good guys.
Right, yeah, of course.
Good guys.
A lot of yeah. good people.
But honestly, though, all in my experience, the least good guys, the worst people, the worst comedians are the funniest ones.
Like the meanest people are the funniest ones?
Meanest.
The worst comedians are the funniest. You're going to have to explain.
No, the,
yeah.
the worst people. They're assholes.
Oh, are the funniest comedians?
Yes.
Well, yeah, because they're all depressed and they're not really acting.
No, they're not. But what is that? Well, you just said it, but
It's just because they're terrible human beings, and we're not used to seeing complete shit like Louis C.K. Like complete. I'm not saying he's an awful human being, but he's obviously as depressed as he is on his show and then on stage, and he's obviously a bit of a fuck you kind of guy.
Yeah.
And you're not used to seeing that every day. I mean, I get it all the time. People, I got into a fight today.
But you're one of those guys that doesn't like or appreciate the angry kind. Like, you're like a nice, happy guy.
Yeah, and what's weird is, so then when I post anything on the book or on the Twitter that's like not nice and happy, then people think I'm being so serious that they delete me. I got unfriended today by two people.
Really?
Yeah.
About what?
Let's do that today.
Oh,
let's
are we gonna
go
delve
through
into
the Matthew
that?
Aaron Facebook.
Oh, oh God. Yeah.
Ooh, my favorite part of the show.
Speaking of Facebook, Alex Luisi just found me on the book, and we had a moment.
I said, when my life turns into stopping by houses to introduce babies and take pictures and gossip about nothing, shoot me.
Okay.
Single until proven otherwise.
I really will shoot you when you do that, though.
Please do.
Because I hate that so
much.
Please
do. I do, too. But I know a lot of people whose lives are that.
Because I am a stereotypical.
Well, this was someone. I want to give you this argument, and then you tell me how you feel. I'll give you the babies part, but do you spend as much time on Facebook as someone taking pictures and showing off their babies? How different are we really? I don't have a baby that I show off and then gossip about shit that doesn't matter. I use my show to gossip about shit that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I don't have a baby.
I don't let my baby do the talking in my life for me.
Let me give you some more Matthew Aaron Gold from the weekend. I did like this. Steve posted on my wall from The Onion.
Oh, yes.
Nation's weirdest teenager buys season one DVD of Murphy Brown.
If that's not us.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Good. Here's something I noticed yesterday. If you take Sherry Shepherd home after a night, right?
Why?
And you bang her. All right, I'm just saying.
Okay.
Rhetorical. Okay. I'm not saying you're going to bang Sherry Shepherd.
No.
But let's say you do. Let's say you're fucking the weave off her head, right?
Okay.
Do you wake up in the morning and she has the weave off and you turn over and you see like Tracy Morgan?
I hope not.
I was watching The View. That's Tracy, what I was thinking about.
No, Tracy Morgan in the fat suit. Or what's that guy's name from Hot Tub Time Machine, the black guy? He's on that show.
Oh, Craig Robinson.
It's Craig Robinson.
Yeah, well, you know what else? I was watching The View yesterday, and Whoopi Goldberg, and I had to post this.
Oh.
Whoopi Goldberg was talking about getting poop stuck in her fingernails from wiping.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And she said that's why she stopped biting her fingernails, because she wipes too much, and she'd get poop stuck in them, and she didn't want to be eating the bacteria.
But see, I wipe a lot, too.
Wash your fucking hands?
Yeah, what is she using?
Is she using her hands to wipe?
Square? Yeah, is she using a square, and is she not washing?
Well, maybe you shouldn't have the kind of poop that you can get on your hands. Maybe you should eat some bran, Whoopi. Some money. You're a successful person.
Oh, can we talk about this? I don't want to talk about Amy Winehouse. We're not talking about
Please don't.
I don't give any credential to that, okay? But let's do this.
Although you did say something good last night about it.
Well, let's do this. This is what I want to talk about. I did post a status that says, I'm saving all my RIP Facebook statuses for legends. Because here's my feeling on it. There's like, Ryan Dunn dies. And before Ryan Dunn died, half the world was like, who the fuck's Ryan Dunn? And then the other half was like, he shoved Hot Wheels up his ass. He's cool.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
God.
Okay. So you go to Rest in Peace Ryan Dunn on Facebook, and there's like 500,000 fans, right?
Right.
Tons of fans. I guarantee you when Jack Nicholson croaks, it'll be me saying RIP and all the old-timers on Facebook.
Right.
So I'm saving all my RIPs for people that really deserve them.
Okay.
I'm not going to toss around that RIP anymore.
You don't get a certain amount of RIPs in life that
I
you
feel
can
though,
use.
But I feel, though,
what
it should
that?
Be that way.
Yeah.
It should be.
I feel everyone shouldn't just, every single person that dies, RIP, RIP. Now, fuck you.
Did
no
they all
RIP.
Get to rest in peace?
Yeah, how about you just tell them, oh, sorry, you're dead. And then that's it. Move on.
I write RIPs for people when I think that they died in an interesting way, like Hunter S. Thompson and David Foster Wallace killed themselves.
Yeah.
I wrote RIPs for them.
Yeah, they're deserving.
Yeah, because you know what? They're just like, fuck this. I'm getting out of here. That's I want them to really rest in peace. I don't want anyone not to rest in peace because I wouldn't wish that on someone unless they would really have to be evil.
I'm done tossing around RIP like because it's losing all meaning.
All meaning lost.
All meaning.
All gone.
Can I bring up something else?
Go for it.
Bring up and
the best show on TV right now.
Oh, God.
Ice Loves Coco. I'm sorry. I'm addicted.
God.
I sit in my gazebo. I watch religiously. This week, Coco is now learning how to tango.
Uh-huh.
So she's taking tango classes. But her white instructor, who E tries to sell, is really hot. But he looks like the nerdiest. He looks like Rick Moranis teaching tango, okay?
Oy
so
vey.
He's a total nerd. But Ice is jealous of him because he's dancing with his wife and they're getting all, like, into it.
Oy
vey. So Ice shows up in this bright green suit and bright green, like, Hawaiian shirt and bright lime green shoes that are as shiny as they can get. And Ice then tangos with her. It's the funniest, happiest episode I've seen yet. Then there's another episode where Ice trains his dog Spartacus. Great. And it's great to hear Ice say, I want to get a spritz.
That's the best show on TV.
I'll tell you this. It's better than any sitcom on
minor
TV.
Minor things that you brought up.
It's
yes.
It's better than any sitcom on TV.
Yeah.
Well, Ice Cube has, I mean, Ice T, I know Ice Cube. I love Ice Cube, though, too. But Ice T has so much charisma. It blows my fucking mind. And Coco is actually enjoyable.
Yeah.
And she's hot.
She is hot.
She's
hot. Really hot.
You've got to watch Ice Loves Coco.
I've watched it.
You. It is fun. It's the best romantic comedy on television.
Okay.
It's the best sitcom going.
Best show. Right.
Find me a better sitcom.
All right. Well, sitcom, that's a different story.
Yeah, find
you
me a better
one. You said the word
one.
Sitcom. You said it was one of the best shows on
TV. I mean,
TV.
I know it's reality, but I look at it as a sitcom.
You said
and
it was
I
one of the best
great.
Shows on TV. I was just going to bring up the new season of Breaking Bad.
No, okay.
It's the fucking
well,
best
yes.
show ever.
Yes, it is pretty great. Oh, by the way. The only reason to watch Entourage anymore is Scott Kahn,
yes.
who's phenomenal.
Scott Kahn,
when he came up, I thought he was going to be just some jag-off wannabe whose dad was great.
Yeah.
And he's really been drinking whatever Kool-Aid his dad's been giving him because he's phenomenal.
Well, he was in a very interesting movie last year called Mercy.
Yep.
Which
saw
James
it.
Yeah.
Saw
yeah.
it. Fantastic.
It's good.
Yep, big fan of the Jimmy Kahn. For instance,
I saw it at Facets, actually.
I bet you did.
Yeah.
What a homo.
Yeah. and he, I don't know if he's been, made an appearance on a really bland network sitcom, Matt, so I don't know if you'd seen him.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Wait, who hasn't made an appearance on a
still
bland
network? Well,
yeah, Pat is still here.
Oh, hey, Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Yeah. No way, Pat is still here after all that.
Wait.
Oh, you're falling asleep. We're talking about Scotty Kahn.
Are you saying we're not doing a good
and
show this week?
Ice Loves Coco.
Yeah, Ice Loves Coco. Come on, give me a break.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, Pat, I need you to go get me iced tea.
Iced tea,
you?
Could you book iced tea?
Yeah.
Lots of iced tea.
Yeah, he'll go to the fridge.
Dude, you guys keep ripping, but when I'm more famous and I'm chilling with Ice-T, I'm going to tell him every fucking thing y'all said.
I told you I watched the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. Scott Kahn is that real artsy actor from Ready to Rumble. Calm down.
By the way,
I probably didn't see him in a shitty sitcom. No, but I saw him in Ready to Rumble, pal. I'm good.
Oh, boy. With Davey Arquette.
With Davey Arcs.
Yeah, Davey Arcs is in there.
Wow.
That's right.
Oh, and by
the way, I've seen all the Ocean's movies. All right, I'm hip. I'm hep.
Okay.
Hep?
Hey, why haven't you gotten me Scotty Kahn yet, Pat?
He never told me to.
Well, go get me Scotty Kahn and Jimmy Kahn. Though Jimmy Kahn's publicist may not talk to you now.
No.
I sent them a letter.
By the way,
and it wasn't a good letter.
Yeah.
Huh?
You sent them a letter, huh? One of your famous fuck you letters?
Yeah, that one. How'd you know?
One of my famous
the
fuck
famous
you letters?
One.
Are they famous?
They are. They're in the Smithsonian, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, next to a t-shirt from Joey.
Yeah, right.
And Scott Kahn's only 5'5".
Okay.
You will tower over him.
Yeah, I would be an inch taller.
Man.
I'm a big fan of Scotty.
You could dunk over him.
He looks a little better than me, though.
I don't know if Jimmy Conn will be on the show, though.
Not after the letter I sent.
I don't think he would be impressed by the likes of us.
No, he would be. He's a really cool guy.
Really?
I've met him. He's a cool dude.
I always think of him as like his character in Elf, who just fucking hates everyone around
him. No, he's not like that at all.
Really?
He's the nicest guy. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I just don't think he'd be on the show because I don't think his publicist will ever take it to him. And as I told his publicist, if you don't, one day I will meet James Caan again, and I will tell James Caan I tried having him on my show, and I'm going to tell James Caan to have you fucking fired, you fuck.
Oh, well.
It was a nice letter.
Are you sure you didn't like, take that?
Yeah, frightened by that.
You're going to have to hope.
They better be!
Are you going to have to hope to bump into him at the Playboy Mansion?
That sounds like a Hallmark card.
I do have a theory on bad movies. Any movie is better if you cast James Caan as the lead. So Captain America, Chris Evans, not so good.
Oh.
And we're going to talk about a story on tomorrow's show
I think
I read about Chris Evans.
I think James Caan would have made a sterling Captain America.
And I mean today, Captain America. I want him to be Captain America at his age now, and the movie would have been 20 times better.
Oh, yeah.
20. So I'm just saying, that's my rule on life.
I felt that way about X-Men. I thought, is this with the stupid Origins movies and all that?
Yeah.
I think that I would have liked to see a movie that's about I made a Facebook post about this. That's about the Beast getting in Congress and trying to lobby for mutant rights. And there's no action and no powers and no CGI. It's just the Beast fighting bureaucracy. That would be my X-Men movie. I would see that movie. Would you? What about you, Pat? Matt's nodding his head now.
Because Lee's a nerd. But go ahead, Pat. Would you? Pat's asleep.
Sure,
wake
him
up. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Sure, whatever.
Whatever, Lee. I wasn't even listening to the show
God.
I worked for.
Well, as soon as you talk about something interesting, I'll listen.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Listen up, fucker. Oh, by the way, I haven't seen a music video played in like 10 years.
Yeah.
I saw one played the other day. Now that Mark Antony and J-Lo are getting divorced, they're playing Mark Antony's new single a lot. And a video for it. They play it on everywhere. I saw it on E. I saw it on VH1. And I saw it on MTV. And MTV don't play fucking videos.
Still listening, Pat.
So I guess
yep.
Divorce. They will play your.
They'll make
they
your video.
Play your music videos now.
They will.
Oh, I should get a divorce.
Do you think that's
music.
Why they got divorced right now, though?
Why?
Do you think they made it public right now, though? Because I heard they've been separated a while. So do you think they made it public right now because he had a new single out and a new video?
I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, me either.
Everything's about...
Because I heard it didn't come from J-Lo's camp.
Oh.
By the way, anyone else see Bruce Fretz and his pink drink on the Facebook?
I did.
Oh, yes.
I got to get these framed and put them in
right
the
next
studio.
To the Beatles poster right
yeah.
there.
Right.
Yeah. I got to get those framed. So, Pat, what's interesting going on, pal?
What?
Tell me something interesting, pal.
You know... I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Hey, so what is your opinion on the David Krumholtz, Jenna Dewan, Tatum situation?
You know,
E! Online now following us on Twitter.
What?
E! Online is now following us on Twitter.
I don't think the E! Channel is going to come to your basement.
I think they should. I think they should.
I want him here.
I was trying to think of a way to do a big event to show people that we're popular. And you want to always do it. Oh, shove it up your ass.
Oh.
Fred Neffelmertz, everybody.
Hey.
All right, do whatever you want. What do I care?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you, do you want me to give you the email of the broad that does e-online stuff, though?
Fred and Ethel Mertz?
Yes, what sure. I said.
Is Matt Vivian Vance or William Frawley?
Vivian Vance.
Oh. That's funny. Oh, Pat. I don't know.
Now we do.
Yeah. You know what? I got to say, I appreciate the work you do for the show. Okay. I'm going to give you some love and say thank you for helping us get all these wonderful guests. I've never actually even met Pat. I've never seen him.
No one has.
You never will.
He's Dr. Claw.
Oh no!
We're not gonna get a look at him. We're not gonna get a look at him until You Only Live Twice, where he's played by Donald Pleasance. I don't even know. He's some kind of genius.
I thought he meant Inspector Gadget.
That's what I thought.
No, I did say Inspector Gadget, okay. But then I changed it to James Bond. That's who the character's based on.
Oh, in 2 minutes, I'm going to leave this mess of a train wreck and play some Heavy D and the Boys on the way out.
You should. That's funny.
Do you like Heavy D and the Boys, Pat?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
We could be the backup dancers. Yeah. We'll be the boys.
Pat, could you get me Heavy D, please?
Or Chuck D.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got a ton of things going on.
Whoa. We're sorry, Mr. Heavy, if you're listening. Mr.
Yeah,
Heavy.
Mr. Heavy's off the list.
Mr. Heavy, we're sorry.
Sorry, please, Mr. T.
I like calling him Mr. Heavy.
You know, sometimes I give Pat names of people I want him to book, and he just goes, yeah, because they got anything going on.
Oh, man.
I'm like, ouch.
Pat, are you sad? We seem to have caught you in a bad mood. Are you not in a good mood?
I'm in a very good mood.
Hey, how much?
This is my good mood.
This is his good mood. How much do you like Adam Mansbach, though, Pat?
I like him a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
I like him a lot.
He did say it like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber. I like him a lot.
I like him a lot.
Oh, that was just awful. Oh, Alex is one of those guys that makes a really good businessman.
If you're in the
creatively
monkey business.
Though, oh, in the monkey business, he is one of the monkey, just not one of the starting four.
No.
Oh wow, wow! He is the Pauly Shore of comedy.
Oh no, poor Pauly Shore.
Yeah, poor Pauly.
And you'll never hear that ever again.
He is the Pauly Shore of sitting next to people who are doing a podcast.
Yeah. Anything else, Pat, or else I'm going to go for the night?
No, it's I can cross like 5 people off my list that you've talked about so far on the show.
Heavy D as well, thanks to you.
Yeah.
Mr.
Right.
Mr. Heavy.
Big loss.
We need to get on the show more of those Afro-American people. I want more of them on the show.
There goes that.
There's that. That's gone.
Hey, Pat, you got out the whiteout, right?
Next, NAACP's calling.
And following us on Twitter.
All right, Pat. I'll call you in a little bit, pal, so you can update me on the day.
All right.
I'm going to play some Heavy D and the Boys.
Okay.
Adam Mansbach at adammansbach.com. Check it out.
Yo.
Go the fuck to sleep.
And about 9 other things that are out now or coming out.
Oh, no,
soon.
I was just telling people to go the fuck to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
All right, have a good night.
but I got to keep the bubbling. Do me right, my lonesome dull dough. Tell your man one time, what is this thing called love? I'm not quite sure as to what is going down, but I'm feeling hunky-dory about the thing outside.